Do sit down. We're just going to look at a few PowerPoint sheets here that remind us of the journey so far. Forgive us, I know some of what happens this evening, some of you will have already experienced or encountered in another time and place. But I don't know about you, but for me, the last few weeks has been just that drip, growing awareness of the slavery issue. So we're going to look at it together. The Stop the Traffic campaign is a major global coalition working to stop the sale of people, to see traffickers prosecuted, and to protect the victims of people trafficking and those vulnerable to crime. Number two. People trafficking is the taking of people by deception or violence from their homes for exploitation. It's one modern day form of slavery. Trafficking takes advantage of people in extreme poverty or vulnerability. It's illegal, but it's growing, and it's ruining the lives of millions of men, and particularly women and children. People trafficking is huge. It's thought that there are more slaves today than there were in the days of William Wilberforce and other abolitionists who campaigned so hard against the transatlantic slave trade. Many of these modern-day slaves are trafficked. Their freedom of movement is controlled, as well as when and where they will work and what pay, if any, they will receive. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime says that people trafficking is a global black market worth $7 billion a year. It's the third largest source of income for organized crime, exceeded only by drugs and arms trafficking. And it's the fastest growing of the three. People trafficking affects virtually every country, and particularly affects people who are vulnerable or poor. People who have no other source of income sell their children for as little as $30. Sometimes they're tricked into believing that their children will be better off in another country and able to earn a good living. Traffickers visit the sites of natural disasters, looking for orphans they can sell. Unaccompanied minors passing through immigration can sometimes go missing, picked up by traffickers. And people who are trafficked end up forced into different types of work, as child soldiers, as prostitutes, as camel jockeys, domestic servants, working in sweatshops, forced begging. They will normally be badly treated, denied basic human rights, and have little hope of escape. Support for those who have been trafficked is often inadequate, and many are treated as if they're criminals. Many of the products that we buy have been produced by people who've been trafficked into situations of forced labor. And in a moment, we'll look at something to do with chocolate. March the 25th today, 2007, is the 200th anniversary of the Parliamentary Act that abolished the transatlantic slave trade. The campaign today calls for three things in the light of modern slavery. Firstly, to prevent the sale of people. Secondly, to prosecute the traffickers. And thirdly, to protect the victims. The campaign is working in four different areas. In education, to create awareness and understanding of the subject, to capture people's imaginations and inspire them to act. In advocacy, show people how they can make a difference, help put pressure on those who have the power to minimize this activity. In fundraising, for new projects by organizations across the world. And in Freedom Day, which is today. There are lots of different ways to get involved. There are declaration cards that can be signed. There's behind me here, there's a couple of prayer stations. One has a, what do you call it? What's the list of names? petition. That's right. And at the back, there's some cards that can be signed. There's also a display to the left here about the chocolate issue. And down the back, there's some creative resources there that you can use if you want to do some of your own painting. There's a prayer station there on the right. So later on, there'll be the opportunity to wander around. You may wish to write a letter to your local MP. He was coming last night. He didn't seem to turn up, but you can write to him about that if you like. Where were you last night? But there's paper and envelopes behind me here. There's a Stop the Traffic website from which you can buy a key. It's just a reminder, rather like the Make Poverty History bands that people wore for quite a while, and some still do. A key ring that says Stop the Traffic, just to remind us to keep it in our thinking. Tell others about the campaign. But you might like to visit the Stop the Traffic website, where there's quite a lot of information. And they're promising us regular updates in the future as well. I think that's all that we're going to say at the moment about the campaign. I'm going to introduce somebody in a few moments who can talk to us about some specific ways that we can support one organisation that's working in this area. But first we're going to sing something else, and then we're going to say a couple of prayers together. So would you please stand, and we'll sing together the song At the Foot of the Cross, that reminds us that when we look at brokenness, there's somewhere we can come for the beginnings of putting it all back together again. We're going to change the subject now. I'm going to introduce Kay to you. Kay, come and join me. Some of you may have met Kay if you were here at the vigil last night. I'm so glad that she was willing to come back twice this weekend. Do you want to switch this on?
I think I
could do that, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here again.
Good.
Graham. Thanks for the invitation.
Anybody been to St. Anne's? Did any of you go to St. Anne's school? Do you recognise this lady?
There's a young chap there who didn't go there, I can assure you.
He went quite often. He stood outside the gates.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. In that case, I probably saw him quite frequently as well, then.
Kay and I have written to each other on quite a lot of occasions. She would write to me and say, this person claims to be part of your church. Are they or aren't they? And I'd write back and say yes or no. So it was all part of the admissions procedure for St. Anne's School. And Kay was deputy head there for a while. But she's interested in other things too, not just the education of children, but also the issue of what's happening. And she's recently been visiting Nigeria, and then she came back from Nigeria to work with a voluntary organisation that is, at its heart, is responding to the situation, particularly of trafficked girls who are involved in prostitution. Can you tell us a little bit about your organisation?
Sure. Yes, certainly. It's called the Madai Trust, and it's been set up. It's a national organisation. But what we're doing is we're setting up safe houses in the country to offer a sort of a refuge for women when they are freed by the police from prostitution.
Okay.
And when the police raid a brothel or a sauna or a massage parlour, they're going after the traffickers, the men, and sometimes the women who are involved in this. And the women, very young women sometimes, whom they release, they have nowhere to send them. There's no safety net that we have in the country at the moment, apart from one voluntary organisation based in London, and now the Madai Trust, which now currently has two houses in the country, and we've got two more in the pipeline.
So there's only two or three houses for people who are... But, I mean, there aren't many brothels, are there, in this country? It's not a big problem, surely.
We don't see them. This is a hidden crime. These people, these women, these children are hidden. They are not on the streets. They're not on street corners. They're not in the traditional red light district of an area.
Right.
The police have said in the country, wherever they look, they find.
Even in Southampton?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Wherever they look, they find. And these women are in massage parlours, saunas, or in flats. Flats in perfectly respectable blocks, in apartments, in houses that a trafficker owns, puts the women in there for a short period of time. When they begin to get suspicious, they're moved on somewhere else.
Why do you think the women choose this sort of lifestyle?
I don't think they're choosing to end up where they are, as your presentation just highlighted. These
well,
women,
how do they get into it then?
Okay, these women are coming from extreme poverty all over the world, wherever
right.
they are. Somebody will say to them, I can offer you a better life in the West, and particularly in Great Britain. And this is an attractive, we are living in an attractive country. They will come thinking they're coming to work,
yeah.
thinking they're coming for education, thinking that they are coming just for a short period of time. They're frequently arriving legally. So they're coming from countries which have a right of entry into the United Kingdom. So they're coming from the EU countries.
Okay.
When they arrive at Heathrow, their papers are taken from them as soon as they're through customs, and that's the last they see of them. Now, that then puts them in the situation that if and when they are escape or they are released, they have no way of proving who they are or where they're from.
And what sort of age are the girls generally that have been brought in?
From the youngest that I know of was 14.
Okay.
She escaped or was released by the police after 4 years. So certainly in their mid-teenage years, but children younger than that are brought in, but not necessarily for prostitution. They're brought in to work in food outlets, in factories, in sweatshops, in Britain.
Really?
In Britain. This isn't all happening in the Far East or in Thailand or China.
There was a fairly high-profile case, wasn't there, a few years ago, of the 23 cockle pickers that
that's
were
right.
in Morecambe
yeah,
Bay.
That's right.
Now, that presumably was a very different thing.
They were smuggled in. There's
right.
a big difference between somebody who's smuggled into Britain and somebody who's trafficked into Britain. If I'm coming, thinking I want to come from China, and I can afford to pay somebody to get me into the UK, then I'm paying to be smuggled in. And I know I'm doing that illegally, and I have no papers, no visa, nothing.
Mm.
If I think I'm coming to a better life, I'm coming to employment or study or whatever it might be, then when I arrive, I discover that actually I seem to have sold myself into slavery,
yeah.
then I'm being trafficked. I have no control over being trafficked. And the women are controlled through rape and through violence.
So you're saying that these girls that come in, they're being promised a new life, they're being
yep.
told that, you know, in England it's relatively prosperous, it's
mm-hmm.
relatively free.
Mm-hmm.
So they come in thinking that they're going to get a good job
yes.
or on the bottom rung of a career
yes.
or something like that.
Yes.
And then actually when they arrive, they're sold potentially
at
the airports.
They're possibly sold in the cafes in Heathrow, in the terminals in Heathrow.
And why don't the police do anything about this, Kay?
Well, because the police don't have performance indicators for finding trafficked women or for finding people in slavery. And the police is a public service, so I know only too well, having worked,
yeah.
as you said, in the public sector. You have to do what you are going to be measured against,
right, okay.
what you are going to be checked against. You only get money to do what you are going
so
to
like
be measured against.
Gun crime or violent
Absolutely.
Crime or those
Absolutely.
Sorts of things. Okay.
Absolutely. And if the police have no performance indicators for finding trafficked women, they're not going to look for them. Having said that, there was an operation last year
right.
which ran from January to June, so 6 months in 2006. It was called Operation Pentameter. During that time, the police targeted 10% of the brothels and saunas that they knew about in England. 10%.
Yeah.
And they released, I think it was 450 persons.
Well, we'd like them to visit the other 90%, wouldn't
Absolutely,
we?
Absolutely, we certainly would. So
the answer to that is what?
The answer to that is get on to the MPs.
Right.
I'm sorry Alan Whitehead wasn't here last night. I've been to see him. I've been to see John Denham. Both of them are aware. One of them are I trust, but they're also aware of the issue of sex trafficking.
Right.
And they are committed, they say, to supporting the work that we're doing and the work that the Home Office are doing. But government moves slowly. And a letter to the Home Office, a letter to the Home Secretary, a letter to your local MP, every letter is worth 10 people, they reckon.
Right.
So one letter, 10 letters means 100 people are interested. 100 letters means 1,000 people are interested. They take notice of that number of people's votes.
And you were saying last night, well, I don't want you to go into the details particularly at the moment, but the details of the lives that these women experience when they come into our country.
A grim.
You know, beatings and rapes and so on and so forth. That, I mean, you seem to be saying that the homes that you were setting up, you know, the girls need a long time to recover from the treatment they've had.
They do. They do. They are very, very brutalised. They are dominated by fear. One of the methods that the traffickers use is to, if not show them a body, show them photographs of bodies and say, this girl tried to escape. This will happen to you if you try to escape. If you don't do as we say, if you don't go to this place, this brothel, this sauna, massage parlour, whatever, on a daily basis and accept everything that happens to you there, then you will be beaten.
I mean, the public kind of image of prostitution or whatever, when it's shown on TV, is that it's sort of quite a glamorous lifestyle.
Well, I believe Coronation Street are actually showing that this evening as well. But it's not prostitution. They end up servicing men who go and use trafficked women. They are not choosing this. Yeah. I don't believe many women choose prostitution as a career, but I do accept that the media present it as a glamorous lifestyle.
But it would probably be true that a lot of people kid themselves that if they use these places, that actually they're
there
and happy to be
there. I'm quite sure that. And one of the things that I think all of us can do is look at the demand for prostitution and say, is this right for one human being to degrade another in this manner and exploit another person in this manner?
Well, thank you, Kay. Kay's involved in working with this, with Madeira, that is trying to set up homes across the country where women that are released can go to be healed, to recover and so on. So we're thankful for you for being involved in that work, and we'll see what we can do to help and support.
I shall keep you to that.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to come and speak and for your attention this evening. Thank
Kay's
you very
going
much
to another event soon, so if she walks out, don't think she's taken offence to something. I always assume that people are taking offence if they leave, but that's because I don't see what's on the telly. I'm just going to listen to a couple of readings that say something about why it matters that Christians care about this stuff.
The first reading is taken from the book of Acts, chapter 2, verses 14 to 21. And you can find it on page 1093 in the Pew Bibles. Peter addresses the crowd. Then Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice, and addressed the crowd. Fellow Jews, and all of you who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say. These men are not drunk, as you suppose. It's only 9 in the morning. No, this is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. I will show wonders in the heaven above and signs on the earth below, blood and fire and billows of smoke. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and glorious day of the Lord. And everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. This is the word of God.
The second reading is from the book of Hebrews, chapter 2, and can be found in the Maroon Pew Bibles on page 1202. Starting at verse 10. In bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers. In the presence of the congregation, I will sing your praises. I will put my I will put my trust in him. And again he says, here am I and the children God has given me. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. This is the word of the Lord.
Keep that open, just have a look at it for a moment. One of the schemes of the devil is to hold people in a place of slavery. Slavery within their life context or slavery in their inner being. That's what he loves to do. He loves to hold us down, to make us think we've got no choices, to bring us to a place where life is destruction. And Jesus said, I have come that you may have life and that you may have it to the full. The devil comes to steal and destroy, but I have come that you may have life. And the beginning of that reading says that the aim of Christ was to bring many sons and daughters to glory. In the words of the Graham Kendrick song, to lift our humanity to the heights of his throne. As it says in Philippians, he became a servant amongst us. And he did so in order to identify with our broken humanity so that he might lift us to that place of glory where we are conscious of our honor as given to us by Christ. And the reading from Hebrews 2 fits the one from Ephesians where it talks about the day that Jesus longs to have us stand beside him to introduce us to the Father in order to be say, these are the children that you have given to me. They have a humanity that is filled with honor. And though life may have been a battle, they arrive at this place as your children, my brothers and sisters, men and women made in the image of God who are good. And there's something about humanity and there is something about evil that loves to cause us from tumble to that awareness. That instead what we embrace is a shallower perspective on humanity that says there's a range of lives and some lives are more worthy than others. And some lives are less worthy than others. But the ones that we associate with in our sinfulness are those that make us feel better about ourselves. And yet when we look at the life of Jesus, he identified with all the people that would make others look down upon him. The tax collector of his day that everyone knew was crooked, his humanity was raised when Jesus ate at his home. The woman who'd been caught in adultery, that the law allowed them to stone her, was freed because Jesus held up the mirror to the crowds and said, any of you that are without sin, throw the first stone. And the woman that was held as a prostitute was freed from her life of prostitution because Jesus loves to lift our humanity. And the challenge for me, and I hope it's a challenge for you too, is how do we work with God in that journey and try and make sure that somehow we don't become over-identified with those who lower the humanity of others. We've talked about it before, haven't we? We've talked about it over the lift the label stuff. We've recognized that sometimes our clothing choices create the market that allows slave labor to be used in making clothes. We've talked about it in relation to global warming, that the choices we make affect the people who are caught in poverty and the weather systems that destroy their natural environment. And now we're talking about it in relation to trafficking. You know, there's a common theme here that just makes me aware, and maybe it's you too, that I cannot say that I'm neutral because I am part of the rich world and the choices I make affect the lives of those who are on the other side of the balance. And Christians, more than anyone else, should care passionately about this stuff, because we do not embrace a humanistic worldview that says, well, that's just the roll of the dice. Some people come out better, some people come out worse. Our ancestors lived with that in Australia and destroyed the Aboriginal people. They did the same in New Zealand. That arrogance that says, I am free to treat people how I like because I'm educated, because I'm wealthy, or whatever. And the reason I chose the reading from Acts chapter 2 is Pentecost was Emancipation Day. That was the day of freedom, actually. Today isn't. I mean, today we're looking at some issues to try and move things on. The real day of freedom was Pentecost Day. Peter stood up with the 11 and said, fellow Jews and all who live in Jerusalem. Immediately people would have said, hang on a minute, fellow Jews, don't include the others that live in Jerusalem. There are some people here, you know, according to our racist model of belief, who aren't worth quite as much as us Jews. If you're going to address us, then address us separately, will you? Talk to us in a nice environment. But he didn't. Fellow Jews and all who live in Jerusalem, listen carefully to what I'm about to say. In these last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. And those who felt a little superior would have thought, I'm in line for a good thing here. Maybe those who didn't know that Jesus was born in a food trough in a stable. I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and your daughters. Hold on a minute. We don't allow women to speak. Daughters prophesying. Hang on. Religion, it's about men. Temple court. We want the prophesying in the middle. Surely the... No. Men and women will prophesy. Your young men will dream dreams. Your old men will have visions. Wait a minute. We respect the old here, not the young. The young have got a lot to learn from us older people. No, your sons and your daughters, your young men, your old men. And then the rub. Even on my servants, both men and women, even on those who were in servitude, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. And finally, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. There is no pecking order before the cross. In fact, Jesus says, you know, it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. It's like trying to get a camel through the eye of a needle. Because actually the rich are very good at being self-sufficient. Very good at forgetting their dependency on the author of their life and the sustainer of their universe. But the poor... Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those when men revile you. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. This stuff matters because of the first Freedom Day. That was the day when God said, there is no longer slave and free. There is no longer men and women. There's no longer rulers and servants. There's no longer Jews and Gentiles, black or white, rich or poor. The ground before the cross is level. And the challenge to me on this level, you know, begins at very fundamental levels. How do I treat waitresses when I'm buying a meal? Do I, in the way that I deal with them, remember that whatever their uniform, their heart has been purchased with just as big a price as mine. And it may actually be that if they're dependent on tips, that God has them in mind even more than me at that time. It all matters because of the first Freedom Day. So let's just give ourselves some time to get up, stretch, walk around. Look at some stuff around the place. You may want to pray on your own. You may want to pray in your groups again. You may want to sort of wander around here, sign something or write something or whatever you want to do with the space. Let's give each other a little bit more space. Or it may just be that you want to sit on your own for a moment. You just want to say, Lord, if this stuff needs to touch me, then I'm willing for you to do that. Show me how I can make a difference. Here endeth.